Well, here. There's always an overtone in the magistrate's address, Gascoigne explained. Gentlemen of Westland, there is your first clue. Crimes of shame and degradation. There's your second.
I see, Moody said, though he did not. His gaze flickered over Gascoigne's shoulder. The fat man had moved to the pair of Chinese men and was scribbling something on the flyleaf of his pocketbook for them to read. Perhaps the woman was wrongly indicted. Perhaps that is what captured everyone's attention.
Oh, she wasn't jailed for whoring, Gascoigne said. The sergeants don't care a straw about that. As long as a man is discreet enough, they are quite content to look the other way.
Moody waited. There was an unsettling quality to the way that Gascoigne spoke. It was both guarded and confiding at once. Moody felt that he could not trust him. The clerk was perhaps in his middle thirties. His pale hair had begun to silver above his ears, and he wore a pale moustache, brushed sideways from a central part. His herringbone suit was tailored closely to his body.
Why? Gascoigne added after a moment. The sergeant himself made a proposition of her directly after the committal.
The committal? Moody echoed, feeling foolish. He wished that the other man would speak a little less cryptically and at greater length. He had a cultivated air. He made Thomas Balfour seem as blunt as a doorstop, but it was a cultivation somehow mourned. He spoke as a disappointed man, for whom perfection existed only as something remembered, and then regretted because it was lost.
She was tried for trying to take her own life, Gascoigne said. There's a symmetry in that, do you not think? Tried for trying?
Moody thought it inappropriate to agree, and in any case he did not care to pursue that line of thinking. He said, to change the subject,
And the master of my vessel, Mr. Carver, he is connected to this woman somehow, I presume.
Oh, yes, Carver's connected, Gascoigne said.
He looked at the cigarette in his hand, seemed suddenly disgusted with it, and threw it into the fire.
He killed his own child.
Moody drew back in horror.
I beg your pardon. They can't prove it, of course,
Gascoigne said darkly,
but the man's a brute. You are quite right to want to avoid him.
Moody stared at him, again at a loss for how to reply.
Every man has his currency, Gascoigne added after a moment. Perhaps it's gold. Perhaps it's women. Anna Wetherell, you see, was both.
At this point, the fat man returned, with his glass refreshed. He sat down, looked first to Gascoigne and then to Moody, and seemed to recognize, obscurely, a social obligation to introduce himself. He leant forward and thrust out his hand.
"Name's Dick Mannering."
"It's a pleasure," Moody said in a rather automatic tone. He felt disoriented. He wished Gascoigne had not been interrupted quite at that moment, so he could have pressed him further on the subject of the whore. It was indelicate to attempt to revive the subject now. In any case, Gascoigne had retreated back into his armchair, and his face had closed. He began turning his cigarette case over again in his hands.
"Prince of Wales Opera House, that's me,"
Mannering added as he sat back.
"Capital," said Moody.
"Only show in town."
Mannering wrapped the arm of his chair with his knuckles, casting about for a way to proceed. Moody glanced at Gascoigne, but the clerk was staring sourly into his lap. It was clear that the fat man's reappearance had severely displeased him. It was also clear that he saw no reason to conceal his displeasure from its object, whose face, Moody saw with embarrassment, had turned a very dark shade of red.
"I could not help but admire your watch chin earlier," Moody said at last, addressing Mannering. "Is it Hokitika gold?"
"Nice piece, isn't it?" Mannering said,
without looking down at his chest or lifting his fingers to touch the admired item. He wrapped the arms of his chair a second time.
"Clutha nuggets, in actual fact. I was a Kawarau. Dunstan, then Clutha.
I confess I'm not familiar with the names, Moody said. I assume there are Targo fields. Mannering assented that they were, and began to expand on the subject of company mining and the value of the dredge. You're all diggers here, Moody said when he was done, moving his fingertips in a little circle in the air to indicate that he meant the room at large.
Not one, excepting the Chinaman, of course, Mannering said. Camp followers is the term, though most of us started off in the gorge. Most gold on a goldfield's found where? At the hotels, at the shanties. Mates spend the stuff as soon as they find it. Tell you what, you might do better to open a business than to head to the hills. Get yourself a license. Start selling grog.
That must be wise advice if you've acted upon it yourself, Moody said. Mannering settled back into his chair, seeming very contented with the compliment. Yes, he had quit the fields, and now paid other men to work his claims for a percentage of the yield. He was from Sussex. Hokitika was a fine place, but there were fewer girls than was proper in a town of such a size. He loved all kinds of harmony. He had modelled his opera house upon the Adelphi at the West End. He felt that the old song and supper could not be beat. He could not abide public houses, and small beer made him ill. The floods at Dunstan had been dreadful, dreadful. The Hokitika rain was hard to bear. He would say again that there was nothing nicer than a four-part harmony, the voices like threads in a piece of silk. Splendid, Moody murmured. Gascoigne had made no movement at all during the soliloquy, save for the compulsive rhythm of his long, pale hands as he turned the silver object over in his lap. Mannering, for his part, had not registered the clerk's presence at all, and in fact had directed his speech at a spot some 3 feet above Moody's head, as if Moody's presence did not really concern him either. At length the whispered drama that was taking place on their periphery began to approach a kind of resolution, and the fat man's patter subsided. The dark-haired man returned, sitting down in his former position on Moody's left. Balfour came after him, carrying 2 sizable measures of brandy. He passed one of the glasses to Moody, waved his hand at the latter's thanks, and sat down.
"Why, oh, an explanation," he said, "for the rudeness with which I was questioning you just now, Mr. Moody. You needn't demur, it's quite true. The truth, sir, deserves a tale, and that's as short as I can make it."